We're here in the offices of the American Federation of Government Employees. I'm sitting here with J. David Cox. He's the national president of AFGE. They've taken some time, and I really appreciate you taking time for us to sit down here in Labor History Month. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Rick. Glad to have you over.
So I look at the history of your union. You know, started and founded in 1932, heart of the Great Depression, all of the issues that led to that founding. It looks like we're almost refighting and seeing today.
I think you're correct. We are looking somewhat at a patronage system. I won't even talk about the recent news of constant firing of government officials, and there's a push nowadays to change the laws where we can easily fire all government employees, get rid of due processes. And again, somebody puts a bumper sticker on their car, they'd be eligible to get a job with the government. So times are changing and trying to go back that way of AFG's original founding. But I'm glad for the founders that put this union in business and certainly took it in the correct direction through the years.
But you go back to that, and you know, you hear this frame an awful lot, that you know the union and what you do, something we needed 100 years ago. That's history. And yet you look at the patronage system, as you brought up, we're almost back to that. And I think a lot of people, they don't know the history of patronage, or they've forgotten.
I think they've forgotten. We need a professional civil service. While presidents come and go, Congress comes and goes, but yet people want their Social Security checks, they want veterans' health care, they want their food inspected, they want to have safe travel, security at the airports, they want the air traffic control to go on, all these government services, and those services continue from administration to administration. They continue. Some of the processes change, but we do have a strong professional civil service in this country to provide good government services. And people tend to forget the number of federal employees has stayed consistently around 2 million since Dwight Eisenhower days. The shadow workforce, the contract workforce, has definitely gone up, which has driven up the federal budget. But the number of federal employees has stayed almost flatline.
Yeah,
for many years.
It's interesting you bring that up because you know, you've seen this war on workers over the last 30 years, and a big part of it is the federal workforce and this attack on your members and, well, on the taxpayer. Because I look for and I can't find many places where the private sector does what you guys do and your members do better than you do.
We've always proven over and over that we do it better for a better price. Our people do it with a passion. I worked for the VA as a registered nurse, but I saw nursing assistants work in that VA medical center, that cared for veterans. They were the only family members a lot of those veterans had, and they remembered them on their birthday. They would always try to bring a little cake or something like that to honor them, because many of them had no other family members. Many of them suffered a lifetime of mental illness, other debilitating illnesses. So the employees were the family members of them, and they cared about them very, very much. So civil service, they have a passion for what they do. Talk to our TSA people, the transportation security officers. These people are passionate about screening passengers at the airport. They're extremely passionate about doing their job, doing it proficiently. I laugh with them sometimes. They use all these acronyms. I say, y'all just driving me crazy. All I want to know is, like, you know, how do you get all this people screened so quickly? And again, have protected this country. We've not had another 9/11 since we've had a professional civil service screening force of taking care of.
Yet we constantly hear, you constantly hear travelers complaining that it's invasive, it's too much. I argue that, if we put back into the hands of private companies, who are you going to complain about then?
Private companies did a lot of similar things, but they didn't do it nearly as well. And let's be real, this country came to a standstill on 9/11. The American people screamed out that needs to be a service of the federal government, airport screening. And we've seen, now that we have a professional workforce doing the screening of passengers and baggage, we have our safety is much improved. And occasionally you'll talk about, you saw where various things got through and the screeners didn't catch it. that's a constant ongoing testing of the system to constantly improve the system.
Right.
Part of that is designed to figure out how to do something that someone can't catch so that we can train the screeners to catch it the next time. It's a constant improvement, just as in healthcare, there's constant improvement.
Right, and that's one of the things that you guys here with AFGE really work on, improvement of your membership and
yes.
training and all of that stuff, right?
Oh, certainly. If you look at all of our contracts, we want training is a big article. We want training for our membership for on the job and helping them to train for promotions and career development. So those are always very, very big issues in our contracts.
Now you go back to pre-1962, before John F. Kennedy's Executive Order 10988, and you look at federal employees don't have bargaining rights. They don't have the ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. And I would argue not to have the ability to demand that training and that backup.
That's true. And before the Kennedy executive order, you know, AFG was in existence. We were out there. Our people were banding together, pushing for an improved civil service, and AFG led the fight. Federal employees have annual leave, sick leave, health insurance, retirement. All those were things that AFG went to Congress, got introduced, passed into law. It wasn't just somebody said, well, this is a good idea, let me do it.
It wasn't the benevolence of the federal government said, here, please take these things?
No, it wasn't. It was because this union, the American Federation of Government Employees, blazed that trail and led that charge to make it happen for federal and D.C. government workers, as we do represent some D.C. government workers also.
Because we hear that frame a lot, that you know all of the things like you know the eight-hour day, health care, pensions, all of the good working conditions, all that stuff was just bestowed upon us by benevolent employers.
No, these things happen because of the labor movement. And in a meeting that I was in last night, people were talking about, well, are unions outdated? And I'm saying no. Unions are going through some transformation. TSA, when we organized them, they did not have collective bargaining. They still have less collective bargaining rights than all other federal employees, but there was a desire to form and join a union, an entity that would fight for better working conditions, for better pay, better benefits, lobby Congress on their behalf. So we changed our philosophy in AFGE and went out and organized TSA. Other unions are doing the same type thing. There was a conversation about cosmetologists, and yeah, most of them are independent contractors, but yet they were joining together to form a group to where, yes, that they would all get certain amounts of pay from their employers and that they would be treated in a certain mannerism. So we're adapting and changing as our world changes, but
right.
That's going to be the future of the labor movement, and I'm ready for it, and we're ready for it in AFGE.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it still comes back to hours, wages, conditions.
Yes, sir,
it does. That never changes.
It never changes, and everything that I see, working people have less and less, and the chief executive officers of big corporations have more and more. The wage gap continues to grow in this country, and the only thing that's going to make a difference in that is increasing the number of union members. When union density was much higher, wages were much higher, as well as benefits. And as the number has decreased, so has wages. So there's a clear correlation that goes together.
So how do you take that message? Because you know, it's one of the things that I argue quite often for people who say, well, unions are outdated. I ask, do you have health care? Do you have retirement? Have you seen a raise in the last 30 years? And ultimately what it comes back to is, well, those people have all those things. Those union people have it, I don't. They shouldn't have it, seems to be the frame that I hear. I don't, maybe you hear the same thing. How do you turn that around and say, yeah, we've got good benefits. Yeah, we make decent wages, we have a say, and you should too.
That's been part of the attack upon government workers, be it at the federal level or state, city, county level. We gave up many things through the years for pensions, for health care. We gave up pay raises, and now there's a pushback. Well, if I don't have a pension plan, you shouldn't have a pension plan. Why are we not working for everyone to have a pension plan of some kind, for everyone to have health care, for everyone to have a living wage? I admire all the groups that's worked for a $15 minimum wage in this country, and it seems like we're not talking about that quite as much now as we have been, But clearly, $15 is really still not a living wage, particularly in the D.C. area. Right. I can tell you, you can't live on $15 an hour. And but that's at least it's a starting point, a way to increase wages. And when we push the bottom up, we will push everyone up.
Yeah, as a union person, and I say that proudly because, look, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. The reality is I now live in a neighborhood with doctors and lawyers because the work I did for 20 years as a truck driver was well compensated because of my union. And that message doesn't get out enough. And when I was a kid, when you heard someone got a union job, their lives got better immediately. And, you know, I'm curious about your background. I mean, you've risen to the president of this organization. There had to be some union in your background.
My wife and I are first generation union members. I was born and raised in Kannapolis, North Carolina, home of Cannon Towels and Sheets, not known for its friendliness to unions. Long organizing drive there, trying to organize the cotton mills. Finally was successful at the bitter end, but it was a little too late to make that happen. I was offered a job at the VA and was a little bit hesitant because I worked at the private hospital or the county-owned hospital there. And when I almost didn't take that job, my mom said to me, "Boy, you better take that job. It's a union job." My mother didn't say that's a government job. My mother said it was a union job because she knew that VA employees had a union. And with that, I took the job.
You listened to your mother.
I listened to my mother.
Good boy.
Listened to my mother, and I'm very thankful that I listened to my mother. And eventually my wife went to work for the VA, and now my daughter-in-law is a registered nurse at the VA. My niece is a registered nurse at the VA. My sister-in-law is a registered nurse at the VA. I've been a good recruiter.
It's a family affair.
People love the mission of the VA, so they like working there. But at the same token, yes, there is a retirement plan. There is health care that you get to carry into retirement. Those are important things, and that's not a gift from the government or the taxpayers. It's an earned benefit, just like Social Security is an earned benefit. That was part of our salary and our compensation for the years that we worked there.
Yeah, and that's an important thing to point out, that, you know, those benefits, those are part of your compensation package. I think we forget that.
That's true. It's part of it. It's deferred compensation, but it's still part of your compensation.
So since you spent so much time at the VA, obviously, the recent history that we've seen is, government doesn't do this so well. Maybe we should be privatizing the VA. I'm curious your thoughts.
The VA is still the best healthcare system in this country. The VA is very holistic. It treats a person no matter what. And as I've read various articles, yes, the VA supplies veterans with glasses. Secretary Shulkin the other day said maybe the VA should stop doing those type things. But hey, having glasses makes all the difference in the world of my ability to see.
Right.
The VA provides dental care. The VA takes care of the whole person, and it's not just helping them with whatever the war injuries or military injuries may be. It's they helped them with educational benefits. They helped them to be first-time home buyers. The list goes on and on of the services that the VA provides, as well as the children of veterans that could have been affected by Agent Orange and other things. The VA is there to care for the widow and their orphan and the veterans. So I think that mission continues with the VA.
Yeah, but you know, what you've just laid out there, you know, I look at the people who wrap themselves around the photo ops with soldiers and the flag, and yet they seem to be the ones that are pushing these attacks on the VAs and the VA's workforce and federal employees. It's one of those things that just seems out of place to me.
Part of it, they want political paybacks. They want to contract out the services. Government contracts are very lucrative.
So a new form of patronage.
It's a new form of patronage. They want to contract out those services, skim off what makes the most money, and leave the VA with the things that doesn't make money. Therefore, you take the money out of the critical hole. We've seen the same thing with public education. as there's been a constant sucking of the money out of public education. If you do that to the VA, it will harm veterans. All the veterans service organizations bitterly oppose any type of privatization. They oppose the increase of what's called a choice program, which is not really a choice. It's trying to force veterans to go to the private sector. They'll stand in a longer line, receive less quality of care, because the care of a veteran is extremely unique.
And it's specialized. And, you know, I have a friend of mine who was the executive director of the Union Veterans Council, and he said that, you know, the reality is the VA does specific studies and specific treatments for war injuries and for their specific injuries, so that if you have the expertise to deal with amputees, that you have that where the private sector doesn't.
They don't. The pacemaker was developed in the VA. There's all the latest prosthetic limbs and all were developed in the VA. People forget all the missions of the VA. The VA is the largest clinical facility for physicians and nurses throughout this country. Virtually all healthcare providers get part of their clinical education at the VA. The VA is a backup healthcare system for the entire country. A year or so ago, when we had the shooting in Orlando, which was a tragic event that happened in that city, no one talked much about the fact that the VA did over 400 mental health encounters with victims of the shooting, with family members, with others that were there at that event, because that was a very traumatic event. The VA was right there providing services to the American public. They are a backup healthcare system that's ready and dispersed around the country to provide these services, and people don't always understand that.
Yeah.
And you and I, we get great healthcare from our healthcare providers because they got educational opportunities at the VA.
It's interesting to me, but, you know, we're at a time where I think we've forgotten that history of you know, people being, you know, basically cheated on the job, all of these things. And we're at this moment in the current climate politically is you're the target. Your members are the targets.
We are the targets, and that's why AFG, we've got a plan called Big Enough to Win, that we need to get bigger, better, and stronger. Our union's definitely been growing. We've shown a constant growth in our membership, 100% open shops, for the last 25 years, but we have steadily grown in our membership numbers. The real question that I'm asking myself and our members now is the enough part. Are we doing enough? Are we calling members of Congress enough? Are we showing our activism? Are we knocking on those doors? Are we sending the emails? Are we participating in town halls that members of Congress are conducting and showing our concerns? Are we out there involved in the communities? Are we waving the flag, believing in good government, and saying, look, we're the people that provide it. We're also the Little League coaches. We're the Sunday school teachers. We're the Cub Scout leaders. We're the members of the community. We are not evil, bad people. We are good, upstanding, tax-paying citizens of this country that want to service the American people.
Are you sure about that?
Yes, sir. I am positive about that.
I hear all the time how greedy and horrible your members are.
Most of our members make less than $50,000 a year. That's not a lot of money.
But we're told that you guys got the gold-plated Cadillac health care. Golden parachute pension funds.
Our members,
I wish that we did.
I wish
they did.
I wish we did. Our members do have health care. They're in the federal employee health care benefit plan, which has over 400 plans in it, which our members can choose. But as with any health care, they can change their enrollment each year. Many plans get people who are older, sicker, and so the premiums are higher in those plans, but virtually all plans, the deductibles continue to go up, the cost of health care continues to rise, it's not a Cadillac plan, I can promise you, and the federal employee FERS retirement system is not a Cadillac retirement system. The defined benefit portion is a very small portion. It's a combination of a very small defined benefit and a 401k plan and Social Security, which all of those the employees pay into. So they're paying into it. It's a paid for, earned benefit.
It's there, certainly.
It's not something that someone's just giving them.
And it's something that I think every worker in this country should have. You know, but you look at these attacks, and you look at all of the arrows being slung your way, and I have to imagine that it's making your membership, or at least I hope it is, a little more militant. And because I've been arguing for years that workers in this country, in order for us to have a prosperous working class again, have to become more militant and engaged.
Our members are certainly getting out there and getting more engaged. Last year, we had rallies all over the country to save the VA and to protect the VA. There's going to be an event tomorrow, or Friday, excuse me, later on this week at EPA to thank EPA workers for the great work that they are doing.
You mean those job killers?
The job killers, yes.
You know, the people who want clean air and water?
I prefer to, not see the air that I breathe and to know that the water that I drink is safe. And as a kid growing up in Kannapolis, all the streams around the area that I grew up, I always thought water was supposed to be black and brown, and it had the chemicals, the dyes coming out of the mills. It was in the streams and was obviously able to just pump it directly into water supplies.
I got you beat. I grew up in a place where we were expecting the water to catch on fire.
So you understand. And while we thought that was kind of normal at that point in our life, that's abnormal. We have a responsibility to protect our environment and to make sure that people have clean air, clean water. Look at Flint, Michigan. Look what happened there.
Horrible.
That can happen anywhere else in this country. So, EPA does a great service to the American people. And I'm a person that believes in science, and I believe that there are things that we do that certainly can affect the climate. And we see in our own area, we're seeing climate changes. Maybe perhaps some of it we can't control, but I believe all the things we do to our environment does change it somehow.
So you're one of those people. I'll bet you read books too, don't you?
I actually do read books.
So the last line of questioning I've got for you, because we've looked at where we came from, what's going on right now. Where do you see the future going? I mean, you see the deadly policies being put forth by the Trump administration, by Republicans here. Where do you see work for federal employees in the future?
I'm seeing serious concerns. I'm seeing due process rights. We are basically a desire to have all federal employees at-will employees where they can just walk up to them and say, you're fired, you're out of here. Seeing cuts in their pay and their benefits. Federal employees already have given up $182 billion to debt reduction of this country. And still yet have not had much of a pay raise in, I'd say, about 7 or 8 years. So it's time to give federal employees a decent pay raise, but there's a pushback. There's those that want to continue to voucherize the health care program, to contract out more of the work, get anything the taxpayers less service. So sure, there's a fear of our members, but our members are strong, our members are resilient, and they're activists. They're getting out there. They're going to fight for what's right for the American people. And they're going to fight for their jobs also and their agencies. They believe in their agencies. And they actually love their agencies.
Yeah, that's one of those things we've got to tell their stories. J. David Cox, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you so much, Rick.
It was great talking with you.
So great to have you over today.
Thanks so much. We'd love to hear your thoughts. What do you think? Should federal employees have collective bargaining rights, or should we go back to the days of patronage? You can email me, Rick@therickSmithShow.com.